The man sitting in Anya's desk chair had destroyed her home, and she had a pretty good idea what he must have been looking for. Still in defensive mode, Anya kept the door open behind her in case a quick escape was needed.
You know my name. It's only polite I learn yours.
Sergei. You know what I am here for, Miss Green.
I have no idea. How about you tell me? That is, after you apologize for tearing my place apart, you've tossed valuable artifacts on the floor.
Unfortunately, not the valuable artifact I seek. You slipped through my fingers last night.
So he was the guy at the canal. That explained the bruise at the corner of his left eye.
I know you have it. I saw the pictures you posted online.
For as many times as she'd posted photos, and said postings had resulted in cluing the bad guys to finding her, she would never learn.
How did you find me? I cover my tracks well online. My internet profile is secure. You couldn't have traced me.
I have my ways.
She thought better of angering the guy who had turned over her heavy leather couch. His ways may simply have included following her cab home last night. She only took it 8 blocks. And she had been out of her head, not thinking clearly. On the other hand, she'd left him flat on his back. He couldn't possibly have followed her.
So you knew the man I spoke to last night before you shot him?
I fired no weapons last evening.
That supported her theory on the existence of both the sniper and her attacker.
So you and the sniper worked together?
The man looked aside, breaking eye contact. But he didn't drop his dead calm. He reconnected with her gaze immediately.
No.
Anya took a moment to tally up the parties involved. 3 so far. The thief, the sniper, and this lunk.
I've spent an hour going through your things. It's not here.
The idea of this creepy bald guy shuffling through her underwear sent a shiver up Anya's spine.
I could have told you that, if you'd just asked.
News of the skull's emergence pleased me. It is quite a surprise. I thought to have it in hand last night, but then the contact you know has sneaked, switched things. I was unaware of your clandestine meeting on the bridge.
That meant Sergei had been tracking the thief, or the sniper, and emergence. That might rule out the possibility of it being taken from a dig site.
I still cannot understand why he would give it to you.
Well, that sounded personal. What in particular is wrong with me?
I have studied you, Anya. On your own computer.
That explained the laptop on the desk, powered up and open to Google. Nice of him to spare that expensive piece of equipment. The green screen and camera, on the other hand, were definitely a loss.
You're a television personality, as well as an archaeologist. But you're no one special, Miss Green. You are common. Your schooling is common. Your expertise not equal to the world's foremost in your field. Why would he give this skull to you?
I'm cuter than you are.
The man frowned, then stood in one smooth motion. The dark navy suit was tailored to his body. It revealed thick biceps and a broad chest. She couldn't detect any sign of a shoulder holster for a gun bulging under the arm. He didn't approach her. Anya maintained her ready position by the door. Knees slightly bent, hips aligned with her shoulders. Fluttering her fingers, she thought of the sword. She could summon it in an instant, but she didn't. If he was willing to talk, she'd get what information she could from him.
It's not here.
She wasn't about to give directions to Danzinger or Columbia, because she could guess how that would end. One body last night was enough for her.
I believe you. You don't have it on your person either, because you entered with nothing but the empty backpack. You work for Benjamin.
Benjamin?
Sergei towed a thin steel lockpick that had fallen from the backpack.
You don't know what you've been given, do you, Miss Green?
Anya stared at him as if to dig the answer out of his expression. The longer she looked into his eyes, the more her spine tingled.
No, I have no idea what it is.
She looked aside at the mess, then caught a movement in her peripheral vision. Sergei reached inside his suit coat and drew out a blade. Any previous reluctance to calling out her sword fled. With a lunge to her right, Anya dipped low. Maybe he'd think she'd gotten the sword from under the couch. She lunged at him. He blocked her stab with the edge of his bowie knife. Anya swung low. He retaliated. Anya slashed her sword across Sergei's shoulder, opening the seam of his suit coat.
I don't know how you think fighting me is going to help you find the skull. I don't have it.
But you had it, which means you know where it is now.
His knife slashed a shallow wound in her thigh. Anya spun and put her shoulder to his, gripping his knife wrist. Releasing the sword, she grabbed his sleeve. The knife flipped in the air, hit the wall, and dropped onto a stray couch cushion. He slapped a hand over her throat and shoved her off him. Anya's hips connected with the desk. Turning and rolling across the desk, she came to her feet, with sword again in hand. Sergei stood, hands near his shoulders. He was not surrendering by any means, just making nice.
Proficient sword work. I didn't notice the weapon earlier.
Because you're so busy trashing my place.
He blocked her thrust with a jerk of his elbow, then followed through with his other fist. Anya hit the floor, arms spread, and legs landing on a sofa cushion. Sergei leaned over her. Anya rolled to the side just in time and thrust blindly with the sword. The sword slashed across his back, but didn't penetrate what had to be some kind of Kevlar-reinforced stuff. Sergei gripped her hair and tugged her upright. Anya met the wall with her palms, dropping her sword. Sergei punched her hard in the kidneys. No knife, so at least he didn't want her dead. Or maybe he liked to play before he did real damage.
You like to do things the hard way.
A slam from his knuckles at the back of her head crushed her cheek into the brick wall.
I have been doing it the hard way for longer than you can imagine. It's my game, baby. And I can play it all night.
Blood spilled into Anya's mouth. The sword's image formed in her mind, but then streams of blood spilled over that image, and Anya quickly lost the idea of summoning it. Her body slung about, shoulders impacted against the brick wall. Sergei grabbed her left wrist and smashed the back of her hand high on the wall over her head. Seconds stretched as he peered into her eyes. His gray irises were wide, the pupils too small. Demonic. But Anya didn't believe in demons. Sergei was just a man.
I'll give you 24 hours to bring the skull to me. If you do not comply at precisely 5 minutes beyond the 24-hour mark, I will kill you. Got it?
Anya nodded. To argue might earn a broken nose.
How am I supposed to find you?
He reached inside his coat. There was a flash of bright steel. He held some kind of weapon. He hadn't been in position to retrieve the bowie knife.
The Linden Hill Cemetery off Star Street. Tomorrow morning this time.
A graveyard? Swell.
Something sharp pricked her wrist, and the pain only increased. The stab became a searing poker as what felt like a knife entered her flesh and, with a forceful shove, traveled through to bone. Sergei gave the instrument a twist. Agony brought Anya to her knees. Sergei stepped back, struggling to maintain consciousness, and looking up to see the weird tube-like blade he tucked inside his coat. Anya reached out. For what, she didn't know. It seemed as though something should come to her hand. Something that could protect her. Instead, she fell forward and blacked out. So far as apartments went, it was unassuming and quiet. Tucked in a dark corner of Lower Manhattan, in winter, it got about an hour's worth of sunlight around 2 p.m, but grew dark before 4 due to the surrounding tall buildings. The most crime the neighborhood saw was old Lady Simpson going after the postman with her cane, or the occasional burglary. A diminutive Russian market stood 3 blocks west and sold dozens of varieties of caviar and a homemade borscht that tasted excellent served with heaps of sour cream. Sergei closed the door, sliding the chain lock. The room was dark, peaceful. Palming the smooth hematite globe sitting on the key table near the door, he released anxiety, ego, and any anger the outside world had put upon him. He tapped the globe once. Moving around behind the black leather sofa with the low back, he scanned the living room's cool shadows. There was but the sofa and a coffee table sitting before the slate-tiled hearth he used every night in winter. No nooks for anyone to hide. Assured that he was alone, he paused before the entry to the Spartan kitchen and placed his palm upon the second hematite globe he kept on a hip-high iron stand. The cool stone took him farther from the world, into sanctity. A glance reassured him that the kitchen was empty. The short, narrow aisle down the center was bare. Doorless cupboards revealed glassware and plates. A grocery list, stuck to the refrigerator, awaited Sergei's precise scribbles for the next trip to market. Two taps to the hematite globe. He crossed before the window, looking over a chain-link fenced-in yard behind a textile factory, but did not look outside. His sleeve brushed the cheap shades that had been in the apartment when he'd assumed rent. As with the kitchen, there was no bedroom door. It was a small, efficient room he used only for sleeping. He did not bring women home. Sanctuary would be lost. Though, certainly, he did go home with a woman when opportunity arose. A queen-size bed was covered by a taut black bedspread and two pillows encased in matching black cotton covers. Beside the bed, on the nightstand, the white lilies he'd purchased 2 days earlier from the Russian market were beginning to wilt. Sergei touched a bedpost, a smooth hematite globe. He moved to the next bedpost. Shrugging off his suit coat, he tossed it on the bed. He wasn't a neatnik, but his home did remain pristine. He didn't spend much time here. Since setting foot on American soil a year earlier, he'd been kept busy. He liked to be busy. But a busy mind was not always favorable. Distilling, releasing the outside world upon arrival home, was always important. A shower felt necessary after picking through the Creed woman's home. How one person could collect so much material stuff and jam it all into the small loft was beyond him. Though it had been an interesting collection of things, the artifacts and books had clashed oddly with the baseball team pennants and pink ruffled pillows. Unhooking his cufflinks, he then unbuttoned the crisp white shirt and discarded it on the suit coat. Unbuttoning his pants, he let them hang loosely at his hips. Starting for the shower, he remembered and swung around to probe the inner pocket of his coat. He drew out the biopsy tool and inspected the bloodied tip. The stainless steel blade was curved, curled the length much like the large cheese corer he'd used as a child. A bone extractor, a tool of his trade. The contents, skin, blood, and bone, were still intact. Forgoing a shower, he pushed open the closet door, the only door in his small apartment beyond the front entrance, and padded inside. Groping through the darkness, his fingers snagged a hanging chain and tugged. A fluorescent light beamed across the interior. The closet was as large as the bedroom. Two suits hung from the bar just inside to the right. The walls were paneled in bamboo. A sisal mat stretched before a small dark wood shrine, bare right now. At the far side of the room, a stainless steel counter stretched 3 feet along the wall. Above it, a glass shelf held many vials, syringes, and jars. His work area. On the topmost shelf, he kept a small library of grimoires and herbal references. It had cost a pretty penny to have these precious items shipped overseas, yet shipping expenses had been covered. Not exactly a perk of his job, more like a necessary evil. Touching a flat switch set above the counter focused a spotlight on the table. Thumbing a box of small waxed papers, he drew one out. Sergei tapped the blade handle against the steel counter. The tiny bit of Anya Creed dislodged and landed on the small rectangle of waxed paper. Using surgical tweezers and looking through a magnifying lens, Sergei separated flesh and muscle from bone. He used his forefinger to swipe away the blood and marrow from the bone. It was a good sample. It didn't crumble, as some did. Sickness, age, and addiction tended to weaken human bone, which was made of minerals, collagen, and water. He was impressed. In his experience, women generally had honeycomb-like bones, especially those living in the United States. The American female's diet was atrocious. Copious sugar and caffeine, and never enough calcium. Of course, this woman was still young, and judging from her physical skills, and ignoring her kitchen inventory, took good care of her body. He tapped a few drops of alcohol onto the pencil eraser-sized sample to clean it. It wasn't necessary to sanitize it. He just needed the bone clean. A small wet tissue cleared away the remaining flesh and blood. He would deposit the bone in a mortar and crush it. The cell phone vibrating in his pants pocket disturbed his concentration. Sergei reached for a glass vial and coaxed the bone into it. A rubber stopper closed it securely. He answered the phone. He did not say his name. Only one person in the city, the entire country, had this number.
Sergei, I'll need you in the office by 3. I've got a necessary task. You're not busy.
For a moment, Sergei stared at the phone. The caller had never been concerned with his private life. For that matter, the caller was his only employer. He should know if he were busy.
Sergei?
I'll be there.
Something wasn't right. Anya woke on her living room floor. Something smelled off. Her wrist pulsed with pain. Rolling to her side, she was startled to see the drops of blood beneath her left hand. For a puncture wound, she'd lost a lot of blood. She examined the wound. It no longer bled. Skin tissue had puckered around the tiny entry circle on the underside of her wrist. She didn't want to probe it. It hadn't gone through and out the other side, though it had damn well felt as if it had. Sergei, her less-than-welcome guest, had shoved something deep into the bone, and he'd twisted.
Like taking a freaking core sample or something.
She sat up, cradling her wrist, and blinked away the wooziness still toying with clear thinking. The light in the room was dull, which told her she'd passed out for some time. It must be late afternoon. It started getting dark early this time of year.
No, not smart, Anya. Why didn't you pull the sword on him?
Because when he'd slammed her against the wall, impact had stolen the senses from her. She hadn't been thinking clearly. Looking around, she saw her door was still open.
Oh, man.
She dragged herself to a half-conscious stagger. Her neighbor across the hall was a night owl. He was probably still sleeping. It was very likely he hadn't heard a thing when Sergei had been tossing bits of her life around. With a glance at the carnage of said life, Anya shook her head. Earlier, she'd only been worried about dusting. Now she was going to need a bobcat with a loader on the front. She wandered into the bathroom to clean her wound. Shampoo bottles, face cream, and tubes of toothpaste and athletic rub were splayed across the floor. The towels she kept tucked beneath the sink cupboard were strewn, half of them landing in the tub. There wasn't much in here she worried about getting broken or damaged. She didn't want to look at the green screen setup. That had cost her a few grand. Though she received money from royalties on her books, and Chasing History's Monsters paid her a nice fee, Anya was a penny pincher. And it was never a day at the park explaining things like this to the insurance company. She'd have to report a break-in again. But she couldn't tell anyone about Sergei if she wanted the insurance check.
If the guy was looking for a skull, why would he open my toothpaste and squeeze that out? This vandalism is just plain malicious.
Clearing out the sink, she turned on the hot water, then some cold. Remembering her call to Bart last night, she dashed for the phone, spraying water across the bathroom floor.
Hello?
Anya, we got an ID on the body lifted from the canal this morning.
That was quick.
Anya stepped across a scatter of books, noting the volume on Scythian metalwork was cracked down the spine. Even if insurance did cover it, she'd never find another. It was irreplaceable.
Who, and more important, what was he?
Marcus Cook. He also goes by the alias Travis Train and a few others. He's a thief, Anya, and a damn good one. He's hit museums in the States, Europe, and a few royal caches in Germany and Poland. The guy likes colored stuff, rubies and emeralds. Interpol's been after him for years.
Big time thief. So why was he interested in a crusty old skull?
Exactly. Jewel thieves don't usually go in for anything they can't immediately fence.
There is gold on this skull, but I doubt that would amount to any more than a few hundred bucks in value.
You didn't mention gold before. An infant skull with gold on it? I'd have to stretch the definition of colored stuff to think it would interest a thief who has only stolen jewels.
Maybe he was hard up? When was his last big job?
That we know of, in 2003. It's been years, which means little. The man could have changed his M.O. So, if we allow he's changed his habits or had just added artifacts to his repertoire, there's still one question. Why do you think Marcus Cook chose to contact you, Anya? Have you ever heard of this guy or come in contact with him before last night?
He saw me on TV and probably thought I looked trustworthy.
Professional thieves do not fence stolen goods with television personalities, Anya.
Anya towed a plastic file of recipe cards detailing notes from a dig in Wales that had toppled on the floor.
Oh, so now I'm a fence? Bart, please. Like I told you, I exchanged a few emails with the guy, then bam!
You always arrange to meet strangers?
Not always. Sometimes they arrange to meet me. You know I can't resist a mysterious artifact, Bart. A skull to me is like a cache of stolen credit cards to you. Yes?
I hate credit card scams. So much paperwork involved. All right, so we'll agree the answer to why the thief chose you will never be solved. And he probably didn't intend to make you a fence, just wanted your opinion on its value.
Agreed.
You get a clue on the skull yet? Someone killed for it. Is it made completely of gold?
There's some decorative gold between the cranial sutures. Total? Probably less than a few ounces. I left it with Professor Danziger at Columbia this morning. He's unable to date the thing because they don't have the proper equipment at the university, but he did find some interesting markings on the skull interior.
Inside it? How does a person get anything inside a skull?
Very carefully.
I need a look at the evidence you have, Anya.
Of course. I'll pack up the tools and get them to you.
What about the skull?
Not in my hands at the moment.
So you're going to sit tight until you get word from the professor? Or do I sense you've already formed a plan to track the origins of this thing? Something that'll see you in more trouble than a pretty young woman like you should be in?
Bart, please. I am so not like that. I'll keep you updated. Let me know if you learn more about the thief. Like where he's been the past few days. You can track his movements, can't you?
Possibly. But I'll need more reasons to do so than curiosity. I may need a certain skull as evidence to trace to its origins. Would you turn it over if you did have it in your hand?
Probably not.
Anya?
Bart, don't press me on this one. You handle the police business. Let me follow the skull's trail.
Anya, you were shot at last night, so I'm gonna press. I'm getting a sense that you're only telling me half of what's going on, and why is that not unusual?
So you'll let me know if you come up with more on Marcus Cook? Anything that can point me to where the skull was found, unearthed, and or stolen is going to help me a lot.
What if it's just another skull?
Men don't kill for just another skull, Bart. I've had a look at it. There are some amazing carvings inside. It's special. I can feel it. But it would help to know if it was taken from a dig or a museum or a private collection.
Anya made a mental note to get online and do a search for infant skulls.
Hey, Anya.
What?
Are we still going to dinner tomorrow night? Anya, how else will you hand off the tools to me?
It's a date. And not even because of business. I want to see you, Bart. It's been too long. Talk to you soon.
She'd hand over the thief's tools, but there was no way she'd give Bart the skull. She went to bandage her wrist. She kept a clinic's worth of medical supplies stored in her bathroom cabinet, which were presently strewn all over the floor.
He was looking for a skull. It couldn't possibly fit in this cabinet. This wasn't necessary.
Minutes later, she dabbed the wound with alcohol and bandaged it with medical tape. It had stopped bleeding. She took bullets and knife slashes all the time. This was nothing.
You are so not the Rambo you sometimes think you are, Anya.
Thoughts of cleaning up the scattered contents of her apartment were preempted by the rumbling in her stomach. Picking through the debris on the kitchen floor and over the counters, she found a box of cereal Sergei hadn't emptied onto the floor. That he had emptied others and unscrewed all the jars astounded her.
Who's gonna hide a skull in a cereal box? Did the guy think he'd find the prize at the bottom of the box?
The fridge was relatively undisturbed. She knew that was because she hadn't gotten groceries lately, and there wasn't much to toss around. She poured milk over the chunks of colored sugar and fortified whole grain, plucked a spoon from a pile of scattered flatware, and padded into the living room to sit before her now clean desk and looked at her laptop.
And to think I was complaining about how messy this desk was. Guy did me a favor. Too bad he doesn't dust.
The cereal was a rough go at first. Her aching jaw reminded her she'd taken a few more punches than she'd delivered. Pressing the spoon over the cereal so it sank deeper into the milk and would become soggy and easier to chew, she moused her way to the archaeological site and found a few replies to her post. Best Man 573 wrote,
You've seen one skull, you've seen them all. Though it does seem to belong to a newborn. Where did you say you found this? Oh, by the way, I love the online pic.
Must not be an anthropologist. And no, I'm not going to tell anyone I found this in some dead man's backpack. Online pic? Must have seen my bio at the chasing site.
In that picture, taken on a lavender-streaked Scottish moor, she wore a boonie hat, cargo shorts, and hiking boots. Not at all sexy, but indicative of her true self. Pink Ribbon Girl started by saying she was only in the 7th grade. Anya worked the numbers and figured she must be about 12 years old.
Hi. I'm so excited to be talking to you. I think you have the skull of Sidon. I just found out about it a week ago and thought it would be an awesome idea for my history report. I handed the outline in to my teacher and she nixed the idea. Said I couldn't write about necrophilia in middle school. It wasn't very becoming of a young girl. I didn't even know what necrophilia was until I looked it up. Ew.
What comes out of kids' mouths today? The poor teachers. If it isn't bad enough they have to deal with gangs and cell phones and ADHD, there's the class brain in the front row writing about necrophilia.
New Battle Rider commented on the various skulls in history.
There are many black magic rituals involving skulls. Blood is drunk from the cranium to gain immortality. In medieval Cathay, rituals to honor gods involved skull bowls lined with brass or copper that blood was drunk out of. The Knights Templar used to worship heads, which could be construed as a skull. That would jive with the cross patee on the gold.
None of them felt right. The cross patee felt like a red herring. A common marking. Could have been a goldsmith's mark or some kind of Freemasonry symbol, Anya thought. She reconsidered the Knights Templar.
Head worshipping?
Anya had cursory knowledge of the monks who had taken vows of chastity and promised to protect helpless peasants who traveled the high roads from thieves. Didn't ring any bells with her, though, regarding skulls. The Templars were a few centuries earlier than her favorite research period. She reread New Battle Rider's email.
I don't know. Worth a look.
She moused to Google and typed in head worshippers. The search brought up references to trepanning, which was carving a hole in the skull to give a swollen brain room or air. The ancient Greeks had used trepanning frequently. Macabre circular hand-cranked drills had been used to cut through the patient's skull. Anesthesia was little more than some crushed herbs in those days. The whole thing gave Anya a headache. She typed in ancient skulls, which brought up more entries than her tired brain could manage. If she wasn't careful, she'd need trepanning to give her gray matter room for expansion.
All right, so I won't rule out Knights Templar.
She couldn't get behind the idea. There were so many grail myths, she didn't want to get drawn into that muck of rumor, legend, and hearsay. Worship of gods made more sense to her. And her skull did have decorative metal. Going back to the archaeology list, she posted a quick note asking if anyone had a skull that had recently gone missing. Not the one attached to your head, she added in parentheses. She didn't list specifics, beyond that it was possibly newborn and medieval. For sure, she'd get lots of inquiries about missing skulls, but she never knew what might be found in the detritus.
Mm.
Shoveling down spoonfuls of cereal, she dripped milk onto the keyboard. Swiping the milk from the spacebar, she winced at the tug beneath the bandage about her wrist.
Talk about the sword attracting danger. Can I just be a normal archaeologist for one day?
Since she'd come into possession of Joan of Arc's sword, normal days were few and far between. And Anya realized she enjoyed the adventure, even the danger, but not the pain.
My kingdom for an aspirin. If I can find one.
She decided she wouldn't get anywhere or think clearly until she'd done some major cleaning.
You're looking well, Sergei.
Sergei Karpenko nodded an acknowledgement, but maintained a stare over the top of Benjamin Ravencroft's head. The businessman's nose leveled at the center of Sergei's chest. He wasn't short. Sergei was tall. He could crush the ineffectual pencil pusher easily, but he would never do it. From what Sergei understood, Ben sold nothing, and people bought those nothings. Things that could not be touched, held, or looked at. It made little sense to Sergei, and he hated that he could not wrap his mind around the concept. Should not a business have a tangible asset to show prospective buyers? It was like selling air. Over the past year, he'd sought any means to crack open his employer's psyche and begin to understand what made the cogs turn in his brain. Thus far, he'd been unsuccessful.
Are you unhappy with your circumstances here in America, Sergei?
Sergei knew better than to provide too much information.
Very pleased, Mr. Ravenscroft. Is there a problem?
No problem. I know the culture shock was initially difficult for you, but you seem to function with ease in the city.
Function meant serving this man. It wasn't as though Sergei had a social life beyond his service to Ben.
The apartment's still satisfactory?
It is.
It's a fine piece of real estate, Sergei. Apartments in Lower Manhattan are hard to come by.
I have no complaints. The place is clean and quiet.
Your stipend is adequate?
Yes, sir.
Good, then.
Ben tilted his head, studying Sergei's face. It was a stoic visage Sergei had practiced all his life. There were so many reasons not to show emotion, especially when one communicated with spirits and passed along messages to the living. Ben shrugged and gestured to the door at his right.
The summoning room has been prepared for you. I'll need information on the Tokyo funds listed in last week's dossier. I've left a copy of the file for you to study. Spirits this afternoon?
They are most open to the future. The one I contact on your behalf seems to enjoy this field you work in. The untouchables.
That's intangibles, Sergei. I'd like to meet the spirits someday.
Impossible. It does not come to corporeal form, as I've explained.
Yes, just voices in your head, eh? You're a marvel, man. You possess a remarkable skill.
I was born this way.
It was not so remarkable, really. Many could commune with a dimension beyond this living realm, but few in the rushed, chaotic modern world took the time to notice that innate intuition. Sergei bowed and crossed the shiny black marble floor to the hidden door in the wall Ben had pointed to. He pressed the wall, and the panel slid an inch inward. The action never ceased to amaze him. Before entering the private room, he bowed his head and looked aside. Ben stared out the window at the view of Central Park below. He lit a clove cigarette, yet the smell didn't cross the room.
All is well with you, sir. Your daughter?
Ben stopped mid-inhale. A wisp of thin white smoke wavered from his nostrils. He didn't turn to Sergei. The tension stiffening his shoulders became apparent.
Measures must be taken, Sergei. We'll discuss it soon.
Sergei nodded and entered the low-lit room. They'd already discussed measures. Sergei did not have the power to give Ben what he most wanted. There were better things to tend to than necromancing for Benjamin Ravenscroft, like researching Anya Creed. With her bone sample at home, Sergei could easily track her footsteps over the past weeks. It was as simple as attaching a bloodhound spirit to her aura. But he had to focus. Ben squeezed the Karpenko family's lives in his greedy corporate hands. And since Sergei had bound himself to the man, he could do no harm against him. Bent over the crushed bone, sweet smoke curled into Sergei's nostrils. He drew in the odor, surrendering to its intoxication. The Creed woman prodded his thoughts. She hadn't been the least unsettled to find him waiting in her home, a home he'd trashed. The skull had not been there.
Why didn't I find that battle sword?
When she'd brought it out, it had given him momentary surprise. He feared very little. No skinny woman with a big sword was going to intimidate him. He may not have martial arts in his arsenal, such a rudimentary grasp at self-defense, yet he could easily exercise enough brute strength to overwhelm and attack. Since he'd begun necromancing as a young boy, Sergei had always felt protective forces about him. He thought of them as a sort of force field against evil and negativity. Yet even that force field could not stop Sergei from agreeing to help when a man asked kindly and promised to secure his family's future. He owed a call to his father and would stop at a phone booth on the way home. Sergei no longer used the fancy cell phone Ben had given him. After a few strange clicks and tones during his first calls to his family, he became suspicious Ben was listening in or tracking his contacts. Sergei knew little about technology, but he was getting over that deficit quickly. Every Saturday he spent 5 hours at the New Amsterdam branch library. The class on surfing the internet for fun and profit had taught him about search engines and how to go deeper for information worth having. It was how he found information on the woman he'd pulled from the Gowanus Canal. He thought he should have processed her bone right away, began to summon with it, see what the greater all had to give him about her. He'd do so later when he returned home. Of course, he could wait. In the morning, she'd bring the skull to him, if she wished to live. Anya Creed had impressed him with her defensive skills and hadn't backed down from him no matter the fight he'd given her. Sergei knew he was imposing. He stuck out like a bull in a daisy patch when walking the streets of Brooklyn. He was a very patient man, but his patience was growing thin with Benjamin's unrelenting demands. The man kept insisting Sergei could conjure a spirit to save the girl. He could not. A necromancer had no power over life and death. He could but contact spirits and use them to manipulate the will of mortals, such as convincing them to turn right into traffic instead of left across a safe intersection. He could use spirits to cause illusions, either visible to all or but a figment of a man's mind. If he wished, he could drive a man to insanity. But he had no such malicious desires. The spirits, unattached to this mortal realm or its constraints of time, provided him knowledge both from past and future. Such knowledge was what Benjamin paid for. How certain stocks would perform, and those patents he bought and sold as if candy. Sergei did not understand the man's business, but he did not have to. The spirit he contacted understood completely and took greedy delight in providing details. It was demonic, the vibe Sergei felt when he conjured. Rarely did he summon demons, though they had their uses. Sergei was so close to holding the skull. It would give him good things. He felt it in his bones. She'd be at Tito's in less than 10 minutes. Anya couldn't walk fast enough. She shoved a hand in her coat pocket to retrieve her cell phone. Professor Danziger's name showed on the caller ID.
Professor, what's up?
It's quite incredible, Anya. I know I was initially reluctant about looking over another skull, but those carvings... I don't believe they're actual carvings.
Anya paused on the street corner waiting for a green light. The thief's backpack, with tools intact, was slung over her shoulder.
What could they be if not carved?
I don't know. It's as if... Well, you'll think I'm crazy.
That's a word I've never heard associated with the rock and roll Danziger.
You tease, but the markings inside the skull, it's as if it was born that way. As if the brain's many convolutions had somehow made the impressions on the skull's interior. They're not carved. It's a reverse imprint.
The light turned green. She was bustled across at the head of a crowd of pedestrians.
Born that way? Professor, what have you been smoking?
Nothing. Yet.
Anya dashed across the street to the restaurant.
But I'm mapping the interior with the snake camera, but it's a slow go. I stayed most of the night. It's just so incredible, I don't want to leave it alone.
Huh. Then maybe we really have something there. Do the markings give any indication to provenance? Year? Nationality?
Well, who can know? And I'm no anthropologist, so I haven't a clue to begin assigning nationality or even sex from bone structure. It's difficult enough with an infant skull. I haven't had the opportunity to research online for anything like this. I never do trust the internet. I'm not sure I'll find time to run over to the library either. There won't be many researchers around because of the holiday break.
Right, I forgot. It's Thanksgiving weekend.
I take it that means you've no family plans?
Nope. Just me and the Macy's parade on TV.
I'd invite you to share the day with me, but all I can offer is turkey TV dinners.
Sounds like heaven. Tomorrow?
It's a date. But I will be here all evening, poring over this incredible skull. Can I keep it until our date?
Certainly. You know of anyone in the area who can date it for us?
I'll give Lamont a call. Not sure if they have the equipment, but it's worth a shot. That is, if anyone's around and not packed off over the river and through the woods to Grandmother's house. Anya, I must let you go. I've got another clear shot from inside. I'm starting to paste things together to get the big picture.
Call me when it's finished. Thanks, Professor.
Anya slid the phone into her pocket and entered Tito's. The hostess knew her and directed her to a table near the back. Bart caught her eye and waved.
Born that way? Incredible.
But nothing, as the holder of Joan of Arc's sword should know, was impossible. Anya slid into the booth.
I ordered for you. I know you like the pulled pork with sofrito.
Mmm, all those peppers and onions. Thanks for agreeing to meet me today. Wine, too. Oh, you spoil me, Bart.
It's on the house.
The owner, Maria, knew them both and always made sure they were well-fed and happy. This wasn't the first time she'd gifted Anya and Bart with wine. It was almost as if she wanted to play matchmaker, designing a romantic setting with wine and food.
Is that the evidence?
All intact, save one very interesting skull. I just talked to the professor. He's very excited about the inner carvings.
Sorry, I can't relate to anything old and dusty like you do, Anya.
Sure you can. You must study cold evidence. Bones dug up from backyards, old bloodstains. It's all the same.
I leave that for forensics.
Dinner arrived. Tito served generous portions designed to feed a small crowd, or at the very least, a hungry archaeologist.
I'm so glad we changed our plans, Bart. I'm starving.
Anya dug in. The plantains nestled beneath the tender pork were sweet, and combined with the savory meat, absolutely sang on her palate. Arms crossed on the table, Bart looked her over, smiling.
You look great, Anya. I haven't seen you in a while. You're really good.
Thanks.
And famished. Pace yourself, or we'll need another bottle of wine before you get to dessert.
Nothing wrong with that. I'm no connoisseur, but this stuff is excellent.
It's better than anything I've had lately. Is that a bruise?
Slipped on a dig.
I doubt it.
Anya shrugged and sipped the white wine. The man was a detective and possessed remarkable deduction skills. She couldn't put a lie past him if she tried. So, back to redirection.
This stuff is great. I wonder if I could get another order just to take home for lunch tomorrow.
Avoiding the subject as usual.
Anya set down her fork and settled against the hard chair back.
What is the subject?
You and your current death-defying adventure. And me and my worries.
I'm a big girl, Bart.
You are. But big girls don't swim in the Gowanus Canal with dead men.
I thought this was a reunion, not an interrogation.
Okay, let's eat. But don't fault me for caring about you.
I would never.
Anya drank more wine because it was easier when she had something to do with her hands than just sitting dumbly exposed to his questioning gaze.
So how is it with the NYPD?
Great. Couldn't be happier. Well, I could, but that's personal.
personal stuff. It's about time. I want to hear some dirt. No girlfriends?
Not lately. You?
Girlfriend? Nope. I don't swing that way.
I'm glad I got you out tonight.
I am too.
Anya held up her wine and Bart matched the move.
Two good friends who worry about each other.
By the time they'd finished the meal and the bottle of wine, Anya had learned Bart was considering online dating. Just to check it out. To learn the scene, he'd used the excuse, in case it ever came up on a case. Why a good-looking guy like Bart had to resort to finding a woman online was beyond her. It must have something to do with his broken engagement. It had hurt him, she could tell. Bart was doing the rebound thing, looking for a replacement for his fiancée. Rebounds never worked out. Even he confessed that much. So, he was basically looking to get laid, though he'd never say it outright like that. She could understand. He wasn't the only one who wanted a little human contact now and then. They stepped outside into a light flutter of snow. Before Anya could say anything, Bart pulled her in for a hug. A good hug. Not flirtatious, yet it warmed every part of her body. She clung to his shoulders before gently moving away.
How'd you know I needed one of those?
Really? That one was for me. This one is for you.
The second hug was even better than the first. Yet Anya couldn't enjoy it completely because, as good as it felt, she did not want to be Bart's rebound girl. Ben swung his briefcase into the maid's waiting arms and glided into the living room to greet his daughter. She didn't rise to hug him. Instead, her attention was glued on the large plasma screen television, muted when he came into the room.
You got home early tonight, Daddy.
I wanted to spend some time with the most beautiful girl in the world.
Mommy?
He settled on the sofa next to her and tucked the end of the pink scarf she wore tied around her scalp behind her ear.
No, you silly. Where is Mommy?
Upstairs, taking a bath. She put supper in the microwave for you. We had beets.
Maybe I'll forget they're in there. I had salad again today. I think we need a new cafeteria at the office. It's either salad or cold roast beef sandwiches.
Mommy said to say goodnight to you.
She always did deliver that morsel through Rachel.
Why does Mommy always go upstairs as soon as she hears you drive into the garage?
He couldn't explain that he and Mommy were not on the best of terms lately. Linda blamed him for the impossible. Ben glanced over the back of the couch. The box of roses sat on the kitchen table, unopened. It wasn't as if he hadn't expected that reaction. The lie he summoned came easily, because it had become rote.
Mommy gets tired early. I see her when I go upstairs after you've gone to bed.
As he grabbed his shirt and suit coat from the closet for tomorrow and snuck into the guest bedroom.
Uh-huh.
Ben wondered if Rachel's teachers had ever captured her attention as easily as a 6-foot plasma TV. This coming home early to tuck the kid in thing was going over like a boulder tossed in a pond.
How you feeling tonight, sweetie?
Good. Not sick?
Not sick is always good.
He stroked his fingers over the soft, blonde hair that snuck out from under her scarf and kissed the crown of her head. The hair had begun to grow back in superfine strands. Rachel wrinkled her nose but snuggled in closer to him.
You smell good, Daddy. What's the spice again?
Cloves. And you smell like a purple dinosaur.
It's groovy grape. I love that shampoo. It smells good enough to eat.
Ben propped his heels on the coffee table and nestled beside his daughter's warm yet frail body. The past 2 months, she'd been through radiation therapy. Yet even with radiation, the chordoma tumor the doctors had removed from the base of her skull could grow back. In fact, the oncologist had seemed sure of it. The relentless cancer could lie in hiding for as long as 10 years and then suddenly strike again. Rachel had lost weight and hair, but not hope. He worried he'd break her if he hugged her too tightly.
What are you watching that has your attention so rapt?
Chasing History's Monsters. What's rapt?
Rapt is what you are right now, glued to the set, immersed in the screen.
Can't bother to give your dad a real hug. Chasing history's monsters? Sounds creepy.
It's not, Daddy. It's got this really pretty woman who stalks through caves and forests and tries to find monsters. She's really smart, too. Not like the other woman with the big knockers.
Knockers? Rachel, where'd you pick up a word like that?
Tracy says her dad calls them knockers.
That's not an appropriate word for little girls to use.
Mom calls them boobs. What do you call them, Daddy?
Ben pointed to the TV to avoid the topic.
Is that her? The one with the...
No, she's the smart one I like.
The chestnut-haired woman on the screen held some bit of pottery and pointed out the crack in it. Even with the sound off, it was clear she was obviously very learned and passionate, even about some crud-encrusted bit of vase.
She is very pretty.
Her name's Anya Creed, and she travels everywhere. I want to be like Anya Creed someday.
Host of a television show?
No, silly, an archaeologist.
That woman's an archaeologist.
He had no idea pot hunters were so physically appealing. And so what if her knockers weren't so big? She was a nice package. Brains, looks, and confidence.
I emailed her the other day.
Huh. Who? The lady on television?
Yeah. It was about the Skull of Sidon.
Rachel, what do you know about the Skull of Sidon?
Well, not much until I did research. I saw it scribbled on one of your work papers last week, Daddy. Don't you know about it?
Yes, but it was just...
A stupid mistake to put questionable information out there for his daughter to find. That made him as inept as the men he'd hired to track Cook.
It must have just been something I heard on a television show. It was just a scribble, sweetie.
Yeah, well, I thought it would be perfect for my history report, so I researched it online and wrote an outline for my teacher. She was not happy.
Ben rubbed a palm over his face. He wasn't sure how much Rachel could have dug up on the skull.
She didn't want me to write about necrophilia. Do you know what that is, Daddy? Gross!
Yes, Rachel, sorry. It's another of those things kids your age shouldn't have to worry about. You should have asked me about it before going to your teacher with it.
Why are you studying old skulls and all that gross stuff?
I'm not, sweetie. Like I said, it was just something that caught my attention and I wrote it down. Nonsense stuff. You know Daddy's always taking notes in case he gets ideas for work. So, did the lady on TV write back to you?
No. She's probably really busy. Too busy for a kid, I guess. I really like Anya Creed. Wish she would have wrote back to me.
She finally shuffled in for a proper hug, and Ben squeezed her gently.
It's about time. I was beginning to wonder if you've forgotten how to hug. Want me to tuck you in?
Can't I watch the end of the show first?
I don't think so. Isn't Mommy taking you to the zoo tomorrow afternoon? You'll need your rest for that.
She gave him the patented pouty face, but Ben knew it wasn't for real, because she followed with a yawn. Poor thing. She'd missed 2 days of school this week thanks to stomach flu. Last week it had been radiation sickness.
All right, I'll go to bed. But will you carry me?
Ben leaned forward.
Climb on, partner.
He secured his daughter's legs with both arms and bounced through the living room, down the hall, and up the stairs to tuck her in. He moved swiftly, because more important things than goodnight kisses and wishes for sweet dreams must be tended. On his way back down to the living room, Ben got sidetracked. The master bedroom door was open. Low light glowed across his wife's shoulders. It had been too many months since he'd seen her bare skin. He couldn't remember when he'd last touched it. Pausing in the doorway, he admired Linda as she pulled the brush through her long blonde hair. Admittedly, Rachel's cancer had been tougher on his wife. She was the one who had to bring their daughter to her doctor's appointments and radiation treatments. It had changed Linda, made her harder, distant. Ben didn't know how to crack that hardened exterior, so he did not try. Instead, he sought acceptance from others. Rebecca's exterior was soft and lush and always giving, and she never blamed him for things he could not control.
What are you staring at?
Shaken from his distressing thoughts, Ben staggered into the room and crossed the floor to his dresser. He dug out a t-shirt and boxer shorts to sleep in.
Nothing. Sorry.
You were late.
Rachel was still awake. I got to kiss her goodnight and tuck her in. I thought that was what you wanted from me. It's hard on me too, Linda.
Yes. I suppose prancing about in your $5,000 business suits and lunching with executives is rather trying. And when you're not working late at the office, you're hanging around with that sinister Russian guy.
He's Ukrainian.
The brush slammed on the vanity.
You never have time for family!
I'm always thinking of Rachel, and don't you dare take that from me!
Linda stared at him in the mirror. Rarely did he get such focused attention from her. Not that he looked for it, because it always ended like this, in an argument. She could never comprehend that he simply needed attention, appreciation. He worked long hours to support his family and pay the medical bills. He had a heart, too, and it broke into more pieces every time he looked at Rachel.
What are you involved in, Ben?
He gaped, then assumed calm. Always, she talked around the subject of their daughter.
I've been building a successful business, if you haven't noticed.
Ben clutched his things and strode toward the door. It was easier to avoid an argument, and he didn't want Rachel overhearing.
So you got the roses.
Your secretary has gotten better at forging your signature.
A simple thank you would have sufficed. Good night, Linda.
5 minutes later, Ben was able to shuck off the chill of Linda and remembered his conversation with Rachel about the skull. He settled onto the couch. The show was just ending. Rachel was right. The woman was pretty and familiar. He'd never seen this show before. It was rare for him to watch anything other than CNN.
Where have I seen her?
He plucked the picture Harris had given him earlier from his pocket. Leaning forward, he compared it to the face on the screen. The sniper photo was grainy, but the jawline and nose were similar. It was the same woman. He was sure of it. Ben tapped the photo against his lower lip.
The sniper couldn't have killed them both. Maybe.
If Anya Creed was dead, the show would feature some kind of memorial. The producers wouldn't run the episode with a dead star.
Anya, I never knew. Great assets.
Anya clicked the internet link in the email from a fan. It landed on a page titled Celebrity Skin, and there was her head, capped by the boonie hat she wore for her biography picture. From the shoulders down, she was naked.
Oh, no. Really?
She clicked the picture and it opened a page devoted exclusively to her, listing all the episodes of Chasing History's Monsters she'd hosted, the books she'd penned, and her various guest spots on Letterman and Conan. Her picture took up half the screen. Anya cringed and looked away from the screen, but like an accident scene, she couldn't make herself look away from the carnage.
Those are not my breasts. Those just look so uncomfortable. And who could think I would do something like this? For that matter, who would do this to me?
Her first guess was the most obvious culprit. Her producer was prone to practical jokes, but he'd never do anything to damage her reputation. Of that, Anya was confident. She searched the site for a contact email. That wouldn't help. Anya felt sure the site would merely brush off her claims to false photographs, even if they knew the truth. Sites like this were rampant online. They likely knew the photos they featured were fakes.
Oh.
She checked her watch. There was no time to track this down. It was an hour before Sergei made good on his promise to kill her. He did know where to find her. She wasn't going to run scared. Sergei was the only one who knew anything about the skull. A graveyard was the last place Anya wanted to meet anyone, even a friend. And Sergei was no friend. But at the moment, he was her only link to the skull's origins, so she wouldn't miss this meeting for the world. Rather, she was assuming he knew about the skull. She could imagine he'd attempt to steal it if he didn't.
Benjamin. Ben who?
Anya pushed down her furred hood and scanned the rows of tombstones. The graveyard was huge. A line of mausoleums stood south of her location. She expected Sergei to pick the most out-of-the-way, least-used area, maybe under some trees for privacy. Sergei stood at the end of a long, neglected open grave, sunk in around the four edges. The grave was half filled with dirt. It could be dangerous to visitors, and had been marked off with orange cones that now lay in a pile tossed as far away as he could manage. The Creed woman came across the grass, her boots kicking up tufts of snow before her. She altered his equilibrium. It was hard to remain focused around her. She was different, unafraid. Fearless women fascinated him. She stopped 30 feet from him. Puffs of air fogged before her parted lips. She held out her arms to reveal she carried nothing. Not the backpack, nor could he see where she might have hidden the skull. Black leggings skimmed long legs. The jacket had many pockets, but it fit her body like a second skin. A rim of fake fox fur on the hood dusted her ears and cheeks. There was no 3-foot-long battle sword in sight. And no skull.